Founders Ramble. Stories from entrepreneurs, how they started, why they started, and where they're going next. Brought to you by the Ministry of Startups.
I'm with Val, who is the sole founder of Protego, and Oz from Organize. We'll find out exactly who they are and what those things do. But first of all, just to remind you what this is all about. This is the Ministry of Startups podcast called the Founders Ramble, where we talk to people that work in the Ministry of Startups for a number of reasons. We do it because maybe people are interested in what you do. There's a lot of people also that might be thinking about moving into the Ministry of Startups or other startup enterprises. Maybe people want to cyberstalk you because they think you're sexy. Or probably slightly more professional than that. It's our familiar territory. We're there every day. But don't forget, it wasn't that long ago for me and probably you that we're working in a completely different corporate world. So that's what's going on. We will start with Oz. Hello, Oz.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm all right, yeah. By the way, I should also mention we're in the pub and you have a mulled wine.
Lovely mulled wine.
So does Val. A bit jealous, actually. It smells really good. And it's a slight festive air in the air as we do probably the last podcast before Christmas. The pub is the commercial tavern just over the road from Ministry of Startups, where we all live and work. Well, not live. No. Ben lives there, but that's...
I basically live there too.
A lot of people starting up do have to put a lot of hours in. Oz, what does Organize do?
So, we realise that with unions going off a cliff, union membership going off a cliff, that people are just getting shafted in work left, right and centre, like any kind of rights, sick pay, all that kind of stuff, maternity rights, it can be anything. But basically there's a whole bunch, if you're under 50, chances are you don't know what a union is. If you're over 50, you possibly hate them because they have quite a bad name, right? So the union movement has died and we want to try and create a way of making sure that workers can stand up for themselves in their own workplaces. So we go in and
that's what unions used to do, wasn't it?
That's what they were meant to do.
Pushed forward everything from higher wages to safer working conditions to
completely
anti-bullying and all that kind of stuff. What happened to that? Why did it get such a bad name?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mix of kind of Thatcherite, years and years of Thatcherite criticism of unions, putting them in a very bad way, plus some, you know, poor behaviour from them in the past.
From the unions.
From the unions. On top of the fact that, you know, they are now all the same person. Having met them and been in a bunch of meetings with them, they are all older, white, male Luddites. They're just terrified of technology. And it's a completely changing workforce, right? It's like, you can't demand on speaking to everybody face to face if nobody wants to talk face to face. And on top of that, everyone's on digital, right? So you can reach a lot of people a lot quicker, but mobilize a lot more people and get your message across to a lot more people if you do it in digital terms. So whilst they have the best intentions and we're working with them, not to say that they're entirely useless, that's not what I mean at all. We do a lot of useful work with them, and they give us a lot of insight as well with their experience, but they don't have a digital arm at all. And it's a really important way to communicate, particularly now. What we try and do is partner campaigns.
Right, so give me an example. Who's on board with you so far?
So, for example, we're working with the IWGB on a Deliveroo campaign.
And the IWGB is?
Our union.
Right.
And we're working with their couriers arm. So they have a whole bunch of people, some of which are Deliveroo drivers, and Deliveroo drivers don't get sick pay, they don't get minimum wage, they don't get national holiday.
Okay. IWGB.
International Workers
of Great Britain.
Great Britain?
International, but Great Britain.
It's International Workers something. Yeah, so we work with those guys at the moment, one of a group of unions that we've been in contact with. And we help them kind of organise Deliveroo riders. So we have a whole bunch of them now. We have their email addresses because they have either signed up petitions or we've done ads with them or whatever.
But is it because the drivers are self-employed or?
Right, exactly. So this is the kind of thing that we're trying to get changed. They work really long hours, some of these riders. For a lot of them, it's their primary job. There is a large portion in which it's their secondary job and it's a supplementary thing for the thing that they do with the most of their time. Often they're self-employed and they have businesses or whatever. But there are a lot of riders who use this as their primary job, particularly very recent migrants. because it doesn't require much language. It doesn't, you know, and it's very simple to get onto, and it has quite low primary costs.
The hardcore capitalist listening to this might already be thinking, wow, they chose to come here, they chose to get a job, they can work the hours they want to work.
Yep.
You know, they knew when it started that it's not Thatcher's Britain, they're not down the mines being represented. What do they deserve? Just playing devil's advocate here, please don't punch me.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a... What they've done is they've come over here and shown the graft to get a bloody job. Mm. And on top of that, they work crazy hours without really complaining. You know, like when I go and talk to a lot of these guys, they say, yeah, you know, it'd be nice to have sick pay. It'd be nice to have that kind of stuff. But I'm just getting on with my job and I just want to keep my head down and do the job I'm here to do. And that's genuinely what they say. And then when you kind of explain to them, look, man, like, get some sick pay here. You can get some things that will make your life easier, that will mean that you can be there for your family, which will mean all of those things.
Yeah.
Then they're really up for it.
And some of these guys working 37 and a half hours a week or more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I suppose the argument is, you might not call it a full-time job, but it is really, isn't it?
Completely.
Because they're feeding their families on it and they have to go to work every day.
Completely.
And they do more hours than a lot of people that have sick pay that don't get those benefits.
Not only are they working crazy shifts like that, but it's also, let's jump to another campaign, which is Amazon drivers, I literally started maybe 2 hours ago, so I have no idea how it's going thus far. But those guys work 12-hour, 11-hour shifts every day.
Yeah.
And don't get sick pay. Don't get minimum.
Is that safe? I'm not comfortable. I should be crossing the road in front of an Amazon van.
it's not safe, but it makes that extra bit of dollar. There was an article today in the Mirror about Amazon drivers talking about how their targets were so severe that a whole bunch of them like don't have time for toilet breaks. They don't, you know, they have none of this. They just have to speed around, and they'll have a horrible time if that doesn't happen. And the same for the people in the actual warehouses. And like, as to the question of when people come over here and they know what the situation is, it's like, that may be the case, but a lot of people don't realize that these workers fit on a continuum that we're all on. And so like, if those people start to get exploited and have their rights taken away, it's only a matter of years, months, whatever, until they come for your rights and it's taken there. And they say, well, look, we do it with these guys.
It's an Amazon driver just coming through. They've decided to put blue lights on now to get those deliveries out just a little bit quicker. That's a really interesting point. Also, I mean, it's a bigger argument. I don't want to sound like a raving lefty, but at the risk of doing so, if they're not getting sick pay and they become sick, because we all know that stress is a massive contributor to becoming long-term illnesses, then it could put weight on the National Health Service that thereby goes back to the taxpayer anyway.
Right, right.
It could cause accidents on the road if they're not being safe. It could clog the roads if they're not doing it in a practical way, and numerous other things. Yeah. So it's not just about looking after these people. It's about looking after a bigger society, is it?
Oh, entirely. And secondary to that is that these people do pay their taxes. You know, they pay into a system that is there to support other people.
Yeah.
You know, they absolutely do pay their taxes. And so when they get injured, if a Deliveroo rider was to get knocked off his or her bike, then they wouldn't be able to ride for Deliveroo and they would have no recompense for that. No compensation, rather, for that.
Is there a moral obligation here? Like, Amazon make stupid amounts of money.
Yeah, they do.
And I can imagine some of them in the boardroom going, we need to make it quicker, we need to refine our methods and come out with these fantastically efficient methods of conveyor belts and barcode scanning and treating people a bit more like lemmings. But at what point do they say, well, I feel a bit bad when I go to bed at night because I feel like I might be running an organisation that has a lot of workers that are unhappy? Does that come into their mind?
It's an interesting question. Am I living in a world with unicorns and rainbows?
Because
it's not the way the system's set up.
Yeah.
The entire system is not set up to care, right? So everyone will only do the minimum that the law requires of them. And there are some people who absolutely understand, some organisations that totally understand that when you look after your workforce, they give back to you, right? They stay in the job longer, they're more efficient, they're healthier, they're happier, and it just means they're better at work.
Perhaps these companies are too big and too young to have got their head around that so far.
It's possibly that. Too fast. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe too money hungry as well.
But on top of that, it's this like there are people who enforce these rules, right, on Amazon warehouse workers or delivery drivers or whoever, to say they have to deliver this many meals, like pack up this many presents, whatever, in a particular time. And they know that those targets are brutal and like very punishing, but they will get praised for that. You know, there are CEOs who you either say, okay, if you look after your workers, it will cost you X amount, or if you make this much money by not looking after your workers, your shareholders are going to be a lot happier, the board are going to be a lot happier. It's your job to make money, right?
But
not to look after
people. It's a very short-term kind of like...
Yeah.
Completely.
And also, I don't suppose a lot of these Deliveroo drivers that have been knocked off get a chance to walk into the boardroom and say,
right,
can I just say my bit?
Yeah.
You know,
right,
they're probably not being noticed, which is where you come in.
Definitely.
Now, one of the things that's really interesting about what you're saying, Oz from Organise, is that you sometimes find them.
Yes.
It sounds to me like when you were talking about Amazon earlier, you're reaching out to them because they don't know that there's a problem. So how does that happen?
Right. So often people do absolutely know there's a problem. It was just in that case of Deliveroo riders, a couple of them, you know, speaking to them, they just thought it was fine. But when I explained it to them, they wanted better rides. They absolutely do know there's a problem. It's just that when they look around them, when they look at their mates, when they look at their friendship circles, when they look at their colleagues, everyone's going through the same thing. And so it's totally normalized.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And this is completely the case with McDonald's workers who we've been campaigning for a while now. Those guys get burnt, there's sexual harassment, there's bullying, there's punishing through a 0 hours contract, there's all of this stuff.
How do you know this?
The way we know it is because off the back of McStrike, which is when a couple of branches went on strike for the first time in the UK, there was a whole load of media attention around it. And we jumped on the back of that and we set up some Facebook ads targeted at McDonald's employees. And we said, do you work for McDonald's? Fill out a quick survey for us. And so that opened a dialogue. We got about 2,000 people on board, 400 of which we're regularly speaking to.
And you do speak to them. This isn't necessarily an email form after this. The reason I know this is sometimes when I'm making a coffee downstairs at Ministry of Startups, I hear you having these quite long chats that sound, if you don't know anything about you, which until now I didn't, I always thought you were a bit weird, if I'm honest. Because most of the chat questions go something like this. How have you been bullied? What makes you feel like life's unfair? And it sounds like you're this wonderful support worker.
Or it sounds like I'm trying to get tips for how to run my perfect evil organisation.
Since I've moved into a mountain and stroked a white cat, I'd like to really know how to crush people.
How do you bully those people?
Yeah, I totally see that. So yeah, you do talk to them and then...
I do talk to them. I try to talk to as many as I can. Obviously, when I say 400 regularly, that's not easy.
Yeah.
Most of that is by email. But I've spoken to... I mean, roughly ended maybe 2 weeks ago or whatever. But my kind of calling people up campaign, which felt like a campaign in itself, was like you would have heard me like ages. I spoke to over 100 workers.
You did.
And when every single one of them is given the space to talk about the problems they face at work, absolutely every single one of them had some kind of horrendous story.
Yeah.
Absolutely every single
it's
one of them.
Probably felt really nice as well to be asked about it as well.
Yeah, I mean,
it feels
pretty shit after
a while. When you've got institutionalisation and you can't speak to your manager or your supervisor and you're sexually harassed or burnt and or not looked after, then you probably feel like, oh, I don't know where to go. It's about time someone called me. And what I'm saying is...
What's wrong with you, Vinny?
What I'm saying is
what's
an angel.
What's wrong with your job?
Oh, let's get started. I'll get another couple of beers in and we shall begin. No, that makes sense. All right, so a lot of the people that listen to these podcasts listen from Ministry of Startups or are about to move into the Ministry of Startups or a similar ilk.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And many of them will be commercially minded people, right?
Right.
So they're probably thinking, this sounds great and it's clearly making the world a better place and bringing justice to the people that haven't got a voice, but where's the money, honey? So where does the money come from and is that part of your motive?
I'll answer the second bit first. No. It's not part of our motive. We want to try and make money with the purpose of paying ourselves and then being able to front as many campaigns as we possibly can whilst staying alive.
So your mission is to make the working world a better place, draw enough money so that you can get paid to do so, because obviously you don't want to get out of bed and talk to 100 people
every day.
No
one's going to buy my Lamborghini.
And then ultimately... It's to try and enforce regulations. Now, some people listening to this would think, that's great, but that's the government's job.
So what's going on there?
Yeah, not very good at it, are they?
No, they're not. No, really, they're not very, very good at that. But they are very good at many other things. For example, I think Brexit is running swimmingly.
And so Brexit does mean Brexit.
It does. And a hard one, a soft one, and a black and white one, or a red, white and blue one. I'm still not sure, but it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, it should be... The government tried to pass laws to look after the base well-being of employees, right? And but they really, really have to be forced to do that, you know, in a lot of respects.
Yeah.
Partly because of the Conservative government we have now, who are mm-hmm. ideologically more aligned with business than they are with individual worker rights. On top of that, like, businesses really, really bend the ear of people in Parliament. Like, it's amazing. I was in Parliament the other day, but...
Are we talking businesses or lobbyists?
We're talking about lobbyists.
Yeah. That are working, and that are paid for by businesses.
Right. But
yeah.
often the two are the same thing. You know, there are a lot of links between those. So I was at Parliament and we were at an event about lobbying in Parliament, and Caroline Lucas was speaking at it. Pretty small room.
Caroline Lucas?
Yeah, she's a MP, a Green Party.
In Brighton?
Yeah.
I knew that name.
The point she made was that it's not that there's lobbyists and Parliament. Lobbyists now are Parliament, was her point. It's like they are so integrated, they have offices in the same building. Like, it's ridiculous. So she was explaining that it's a very, very hard thing to counter, and it requires a lot of people power, to use a very often used campaigner phrase, to do that.
Are we becoming worryingly Americanized then?
Oh, yeah.
Will
slippery slope.
Jeremy Corbyn, if he were to get in at the next election, in a positive way, make you redundant?
I don't think he'd make me redundant.
Is there not enough justice in any government? Because you are arguably, for one, I might be being a bit grandiose, but you're essentially government oversight, aren't you? You are. I mean,
well,
you're managing and lobbying back the other way, no?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean we oversight what they do. Mm. It's we're there to try and equalise what corporations and what lobbyists are trying to get them to do.
Yeah.
The massive fear is that, well, for example, to your Jeremy Corbyn question, lovely chap, you know, agree with a lot of his ideals, and, you know, he may be unproven and whatever, but I agree for the most part with what he says. The problem is that he's up against an entire system, right?
Yeah.
It's like a massive system.
Yeah.
And it's not about one person being the saviour. It's like
one
that has
one
never
party.
Ever worked.
Yeah.
All one party. It's about an entire system in which the tentacles of corporations are in government. And subsequently they can treat workers however they want and keep them marginalised. And I'm only very scared that it will get worse after Brexit, because we need to keep business in this country, understandably. And in order to keep business here, we have to concede to them. And I'm worried that workers' rights might be the first on the plate. So our job will probably be more important after we Brexit, to use it as a verb, which I haven't done before. Does it work?
It does.
After
yeah.
we Brexit?
Yeah, we are Brexiting.
We are Brexiting.
I Brexit, you Brexit,
you Brexit.
He, she Brexit.
We Brexit.
We all don't want to Brexit.
I will call it Brexit.
And we should jump to you, Val. I've been ignoring you and I feel terrible. No. You are the sole founder of Pro2Go. You can find out more at pro2gofood.com. And I would detect from your accent that you're not entirely a Brexit voter.
I am definitely. I wasn't even allowed to vote, so yeah.
Where are you from, Val?
I'm from Belgium.
How long have you been here?
Almost 4 years now.
Well, on behalf of about 50% of Britain, let me say welcome, and
thanks.
We are very glad to have you.
Thanks.
Very much so. You are actually a very good example of what is the sort of counter-argument to Brexit. You have indeed set up a company here in the UK that seems to be doing quite well. What does Pro2Go do?
So we do high-protein meals, all natural. So for vegetarians, meat eaters, fish eaters, and it's in a grab-and-go format. So right now we're delivering mainly online. So we do use Deliveroo. And,
what was it like listening to that? Was it...
No, actually, to be honest, like, I think it's very interesting, because what I always think, like, for example, with shit water like that, I mean, I always feel so sorry for the guys. Mm. I once actually even offered a towel to the guys. They were like, yeah, we're back in the rain anyways.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, like, horrible circumstances for them. And indeed, like, often they do not speak the language very well, and then they struggle with finding the address, and then, mm-hmm. yeah, me, I mean, I get pissed a little bit sometimes because I'm like, you know.
It makes you look bad, yeah.
Yeah, and like indeed, the food is waiting. It's getting cold. Like it's in the notes, very clear how to find the location. But indeed, they don't speak the language very well. So now that makes sense, actually. But yeah, so usually I work with Uber, Deliveroo, and then some other like office delivery platforms and stuff. And I deliver to some gyms too. And we're going to open our first shop next year.
Are you? Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations. Oh, we should get the basics then. How long have you been going so far?
So now it's 1 year and 8 months.
And what, in a nutshell, I hate doing this, but your sort of elevator pitch, your description of your company, what would you say that you're all about?
So yeah, like again, we're high protein, all natural. So we don't use any like whey powders and stuff. And the baseline is that, bottom line is that it's actually healthy food that keeps you full. And it, that does not feel like a punishment, I would say. So because a lot of people think that if you want to eat healthy, you have to eat salads. And then, you know, you're fed up like straight away because also you're hungry straight away.
Yeah.
But this is like filling food that we all recognize. So we have like chicken nuggets, we have mac and cheese. But then just in a healthy way. So.
And can I say, I'm just going to jump on board as a little advert. I have done many a late night at the Ministry of Startups, and you have a little magic fridge downstairs.
I know, yeah.
And I've had the salmon.
The salmon is with a broccoli mash.
Broccoli mash, that's it. I knew it was two vegetables put together, but
yeah.
I never...
So it's broccoli, cauliflower, and celery egg. It's like, yeah.
I'm going to come up with anything. It's the, I'm a very big fan of the squash banana. One of my... One of my favourites. Okay. Anyway, the broccoli mash is outstanding. It's beautiful, and it's really with hot, like, cherry tomatoes as well. Oh, very tasty. And it's quite reasonably valued as well.
Yeah.
We're working in the centre of London here. There's offices all around us. Is that
exactly.
your...
Presumably,
yeah. that's
your
market.
That's actually my main market. Also, with Deliveroo and Uber, which is very handy, is that I can see where everything goes. Mm. So then you really see, like, all the big office buildings and stuff. They're, like, my biggest... biggest customers, also for like lunch deliveries and stuff. Yeah, definitely.
So what's the big mission with the shop? Because that's quite a commitment. The
I know,
whole,
yeah,
got to
but
pay
that's...
rent, you've got to have staff that need to be there.
Yeah.
Are
but...
you scared? Would you like me to hold your hand?
Actually, I always hate that people, I mean, not hate, but
want
like...
to hold a hand.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
No.
I thought I was being smooth, and look what happened.
No, I just mean that, like, I think people always talking risks and problems, whereas actually you have to think about it as challenges, I think.
Yeah.
So
it said a true entrepreneur. Yeah.
Yeah, of course there is a risk, but like there is me giving like a 200% and we'll try to like...
Well, we've talked about this in other podcasts. What you quite often find is the people that are close to you tell you about the risk, which is the last thing you need to hear. They're doing it because they're worried about you, but in reality it would be a lot better if they just didn't and they're a little bit more...
But I never, so for example, last week I was at an event and I was talking with one of like the co-founders of Hummus Brothers. And he was also like warning me for all the risks and, ooh, so basically you're new in the industry. So when you're going to negotiate a lease, oh, you will be in trouble because nobody knows you and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, basically, you know, like that was like a talk. I think we spoke for like half an hour, and after that, like half an hour, I was so dead. I was really like, you know, I can re-argue, but I mean, if you're not a positive guy, then let's stop the conversation, right?
Yeah.
So I just went to the toilet and left because I was.
Did you?
Yeah, of course. I don't want to hear this. I mean, I am aware.
You didn't jump out the bathroom window, did you?
No, I didn't. No, of course I didn't in like a more subtle way, but I think it's just important. Of course, I am aware of the risk. I mean, I have a really good mentor and we go through all of that stuff and I know exactly what is going on, but I mean, yeah, that's just a part of it and everything involves risk, so especially...
All right, let me put the question a very different way. Are you excited at the new opportunities
exactly.
that you're about to face?
Yeah, definitely.
Good for you. So you've got a mentor, that's obviously given you a bit more of positivity.
Yeah, he's great, yeah.
Do you pay for that mentor?
Yeah, I do.
Is that an investment, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. So because I'm a sole founder as well, so basically last year I did a pop-up. And after that pop-up, I was a little bit like, okay, what's next? I didn't really know, like, how do you scale up now? Like, and I was very, you know, just learning everything by doing. I didn't have exact recipe sheets and costings and stuff. I was just doing, you know. So, and then basically I contacted him via my previous employers. They brought us in touch. And
what was your previous employer?
I was working for Nix and Kix, a soft drinks brand.
Okay, mildly related.
Yeah.
You consume it, that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's still food industry.
Yeah.
And they were a startup too. So,
oh, were they? Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how I actually built up a network here, which really helped. And so, yeah, so that's how we got in touch. And since then, yeah, everything is basically set out in Excel sheets and everything is super clear. And there was like a clear schedule on how it would work towards like, you know, raising funds and opening the shop and stuff. So, yeah, like we meet every Monday for 2 hours and then we go through everything. Yeah, through everything that I can basically not touch base with a co-founder. And it helps a lot, especially because he's super experienced himself. So he has Wrap It Up, like the chain with the reps. And that's only one of his companies. He has like a couple of other ones as well.
I mean, obviously, you said you're paying him, so he does it partially for the money. But obviously, he's quite passionate about what he does.
Yeah.
Why? What is it to him? How you do? Does he just like you? How does this work?
Yeah. Of course, first you have like a meeting, and then yeah. Afterwards, he said like, "I would love to work with you. You're passionate. Like, you clearly know what you want to go for."
Yeah.
So I know he's not mentoring like just everybody, but he does have like a couple of food businesses.
That's really encouraging. I've never had a mentor, and I think I might get one. Because some days when you're doing your thing, you think, probably about 4 o'clock, you think, oh, what the fuck am I doing this for? And I think sometimes I need someone to go, do you remember that thing you said last Tuesday about the thing? Oh yeah, no, I did say that. Okay, thanks buddy, see you later, you know? Yeah. I need a mentor on call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can be your mentor for when you try and make a business of putting two vegetables together.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Got any ideas?
No, of course not. But that's not the role of the mentor.
Right. See, you're already proving your worth. all right, well, that's good. So you've got a mentor and you're in a clear direction to get a shop. What is the goal then? So when you, obviously, the best thing to do in business, people say, is to sort of have your end goal in sight and then make movements towards it. And if you need to pivot and change that, you can.
Yeah.
One shop is coming. Do you want more?
Yeah, for sure.
What do you want?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest dream is to expand also internationally.
Cool.
Yeah, that's like a dream that I have already since I was a kid, basically. Pop-up. So I had a pop-up in Old Street Station last year. And then it became super clear to me that also online sales increase, like really, really, like, yeah, they just really increase because... yeah, all of a sudden you have visibility and people all of a sudden believe like, oh yeah, this is where to go. Oh, this must be like something good because they have a store.
Right.
So I think stores, I mean, it goes hand in hand because I had that question a lot when I was fundraising, like why a store and why not just expanding your online sales? Because it really helps when you have a store and then your online sales increase as well.
And tell me about fundraising. How did you do that?
Yeah, of course, first like financial plan, business plan, and then pitching to, yeah, basically friends of friends and connections of my mentor as well.
So there was no crowdfunding, there's no online stuff, this
no.
was people you know.
Yeah.
You're quite charming. Do you think that helps?
I have no idea. You tell me,
what
I don't know.
What do you think, Oz? Do you think that helps her?
Actually, I do think sometimes it's like a bad thing because...
Yeah, I
had one investor that like definitely wasn't talking to me for the right intentions, and then that's really not okay.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
oh,
so
you know, you weren't looking for that sort of investment.
Yeah, exactly. Or like in the beginning
I have that
of the
problem
conversation.
Every day, Val. I like to fight them off with a shitty stick.
Boy, do you cover that.
Or
stick.
In the beginning when you're
really
doing.
Oh, well, that's a shame in a way. I mean, it's
flattering. Or in the beginning, if you're doing a conversation, they often think like, oh, she's young, she's blonde, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
And then I always found that in the beginning of a conversation, I always really had to prove myself, like be really like, because otherwise they just like walk over you.
You do see a lot of people get very confused, particularly about LinkedIn. Like a lot of the attractive women that I know go, people approach me on LinkedIn. It's fucking LinkedIn. It's bad enough on Facebook. It's not OkCupid. I'm on LinkedIn and I'm still getting this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a nice problem to have, but it's not particularly nice when you're actually running a serious business.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot going on, right? Like right now with the hashtag MeToo and stuff like that and all what happened. But my opinion is...
Yeah.
Yeah, like all the sexual harassment and stuff. Like all the women who are now like coming out about the fact that, you know, a guy approached them in a bad way or like at work or...
Oh, is this the entire roll-on effect from probably Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And now a lot of cases are coming out because now everybody starts talking and I mean, I totally agree, it's not acceptable, but on the other way, I think the only way to basically counter it is just to ignore it and just, like, continue and prove them wrong and
good for you. Well, we'll move past that, just as you did with Captain Creepy, and we'll move on to the next point. So you're going to have a shop, you want to go international. There's only one of you. Are you contracting other people in to help?
So I have someone part-time working in the kitchen right now. But of course, next year we're like hiring two people for the shop and two more people for the kitchen. Mm. So that will be exciting. And right now I'm also looking for an intern to like help me on the social media side.
Okay, which is probably growingly important as well.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if we're moving towards the shop, I really want to like create a bus, but pretty hard when I'm always in the kitchen and like.
So, do you still do all the cooking?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you ever sleep?
Yeah, like between like 2 a.m. and
between 7. Meals.
Yeah.
Between meal cooking.
Sometimes I do take naps actually in between.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom knows. Like I share office with Tom and. Sometimes have a nap in like the big blue couches. Yeah.
Where is the shop? I'm not sure if you already asked that.
Right now, I don't want to sign a lease before all the money's on the bank account.
Of course.
So, but the shop will be central. So here, the city, Moorgate.
Right.
I would really love St. Paul's because then, I think it's a good location.
Yeah.
When I walk into this shop as a rushed office worker that's working for a bank that only has 5 minutes, can I get what I want instantly hot?
Yeah.
Yeah. So unlike your model at the moment where you might have to nuke it and it's still incredible, they're just going to be on the shelf
will,
ready to go.
Like, actually, basically, like Pret, we will have like those holding shelves as well.
Mm. All right, wicked. So that's your growth. Incredibly ambitious, almost embarrassingly so. I feel pathetic. What about you? What's your plans, Oz, and your organisation that is beautifully called Organise?
For growth?
Yeah, for growth. Now, obviously, exponential growth isn't that important to you. Your mission isn't to make money and take over a massive slice of the catering world, but it is obviously to make the world a better place. Do you need to grow?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think that there's just so many people being screwed, right? that in order for us to take care of our objective of improving workers' rights, we need to be a lot bigger than the two of us.
You and Natalie, the founder, right?
Right, exactly. It depends on a whole bunch of things, how we do with our campaigns, if we pick the right campaigns, if we make enough money, if we, you know, get those partnership campaigns with unions, and how we do those. Mm. So there is a lot to come, but we've already seen in the past kind of couple of months since we doubled our manpower by, or person power by employing me, things have got better with the two of us working on everything.
Yeah.
More so than two separate people, if you know what I mean.
I see. So growth to come. It's sort of sad, your growth, because you need growth because the world is such an unjust place.
Yeah,
but then it's beautiful in the sense that the more of you there are, the more hopefully just it becomes.
But wouldn't be like a good idea to work also from the other side? So for example, like train HR people and stuff to like make it a better...
Yeah, I think that would be a really cool thing for the future. Obviously, if we get big enough for companies to come and ask us for consultation, then that would be amazing.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I think we have to try and stick to the model that we want to go
for.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, focus on one.
Which is trying to get to workers, but you know,
trying to get to workers, find out their story. Then what? What happens after you know for sure there's injustices in the workplace? What do you do?
So there's a range of things. Once we work out that it's affected one person, then we try and work out how many people it's affected, if there are more stories, if this is widespread or an individual thing.
So let's assume that it's a huge organisation that is a massive problem. What's next?
So a bunch of things. So what we do as a first port of call typically is get a survey on the go. So for everyone that we have targeted and spoken to or whatever, we ask them a bunch of questions and they're very open-ended, just so that they can kind of vent what issues they have with their workplace, if they've spotted anything, if they think anything can be done better, if they've experienced anything that shouldn't really have happened that could have happened to other people. Once we work that out, we try and find the common threads between people's answers. Once we know that, we also try and gather information on it. What percentage of people have experienced this particular thing that we find as a common thread, like what people's particular stories are, then we will go to the press or we can go to the company itself and say, look, these are some issues in your company. I think you should try and sort it. And there's, you know, often a slightly hidden threat in that of saying we will also go to the press.
Do you find at that point that there's surprise or at least the act of surprise from these companies?
Yeah, it's always a little bit threatening because first of all, they have not really had any question to their practice for very, very many years since unions were actually powerful, considerably more powerful than they are today.
They don't really want to hear what you're saying.
Right, because it affects the profits, which they're not lined up to deal with.
Yeah.
So
back to that bottom line again, eh?
Right. And you know, it's difficult to blame a particular person, a particular CEO, a particular HR manager, whatever, because like I say, it's their target and it's the entire system that makes them face in that profit direction.
Mm.
I don't always think they're horrible people, sometimes they are, but you know, it's in order to succeed they have to shaft other people, and that's very typical of the of many, many industries.
So let's assume that there's a massive organisation called McFlonald's.
Right.
And they've got a terrible thing where they have found out, you've done loads of interviews, you know it's a known problem, you've gone to them, you've told them it's a problem, obviously they had to take you more seriously than one member of staff.
Right.
They realise that there's a threat that this could hit the press, but they don't do anything about it.
Mm.
Then what?
So herein kind of lies... Ooh, that's all right. Therein kind of lies the difficulty. We go to the press and we try and make sure that the people who we're representing are getting their voices out as much as possible. So it shouldn't be me speaking in the press, it should be one of the workers anonymously if they're willing to do so.
Oh, I see.
And so
we're very much acting as a go-between.
Exactly,
aren't
we? Exactly. Yeah. So they get in the papers and potentially on any other platform that we can find, and the idea is to try and keep that sustained and ultimately target that bottom line that they care more about.
And to wrap up, now you're both in two incredibly different spheres, although it is quite interesting that you learnt a little bit about the delivery thing, and indeed this is one of the clients that in 10 years' time will no doubt be abusing those workers. but yeah, there's a slight crossover in your business, but they are very different. One's very charitable and the other one is for-profit, but indeed is very giving in the sense that at least it's providing actually fit food for the masses. So both good things for different reasons. Is there anything that you have learnt that you can advise people that are going into business? So what I really mean is people that are a small, medium-sized startup that might well be moving into Ministry of Startups and are going through the struggles. Maybe they're going through some of the problems that you've had, Val, where you talk to investors and all they say is, oh, it's negative, oh, I can't see the point. Or families and friends that are trying to be helpful that give you discouragement where really you need optimistic encouragement. Is there anything you could say to people that are getting into business that's going to help them to be more entrepreneurial?
Yeah, I would say surround you by people that are positive and that are experienced. So that's what I try to do. I reach out to people that I think they probably don't even speak to me. For example, I reached out to the CEO of Paul, the bakeries. And yeah, he's always in the UK or in the US, so it's like little time to catch him, but he did make time for me. And we do speak regularly now, so I think that's the most important part, just like reach out to people.
Yeah.
Definitely not negative people, you don't need them.
What percentage of people are negative to positive, do you think?
I mean, there is a big difference between negative and realistic, right? You need some realism too, but like...
I find Britain quite negative. I've spent the last 12 years living in Canada, and I set up numerous businesses, and every time I told anyone about it, they always use the word awesome.
Yeah, but that's...
And then you come to Britain, and then you go, I've been thinking about setting up a business that I already run in another country that I know will be successful, that involves £1,000 investment. What do you think? And they go, terrible idea. Awful. You'll fail. You might as well sleep in a ditch. Shoot yourself. What is that? Is that British or just because I hang around with the
right
people?
No, actually, it's even worse in Belgium, to be honest.
Is it really?
For me, here is actually quite a positive environment.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Britain's positive.
No, but like I spent some time in Silicon Valley too, and everybody indeed says whenever you're talking about an idea, everybody's like, awesome, great. But I mean, that's not real either, you know? You need some realism. So
maybe Britain is that wonderful middle ground.
Yeah, maybe it is.
When you look at it that way. Thank you, that's very helpful. And yourself, Oz?
So I don't do any of the fundraising, and I joined a little while ago. But one thing that I did learn from Nat, who does most of our fundraising and pretty much everything else, was that even when you have a really good idea, like I think we have, It's still kind of, as a rule of thumb, it's like 1 in 10 will invest. I don't know how widespread that information is.
Does that sound about right to you, does it?
Yeah, I mean, you do. I mean, you have to kiss a lot of frogs before you turn into a prince. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Right. I've kissed you, what, 10 times now?
I believe it was 11. And 11? I'm very upset that you've forgotten about
that. You have to kiss
particularly special
frogs, one. Different ones.
Different ones.
Yeah.
Different, not the same one.
I am the least
times.
Rewarding frog.
But, yeah, 1 in 10 of the investor, which might not seem very high, but it means that, you know, and you'll have way more experience with this, both of you, it must be a lot of rejection before that one comes along and goes like, yeah, I believe in you, and it takes off somewhat, right?
Yeah, I do agree, definitely. And I also agree with that insincerity thing. People that say it's awesome, I can't wait, you usually never see them again.
No.
It's the people that ask loads of questions, they're the ones that are actually genuinely interested. Because they want to invest and they want to check.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you are being asked a lot of questions, it's probably a good reason. So be prepared to answer a few, and you might just get somewhere.
Actually, like, that's my experience. The more questions, the better. Like,
yeah. And also, it makes you think, you know, because they might ask one you don't know, and you go, Jesus, I better check.
It's super challenging. Yeah, it is.
Thank you for your advice very much. You have been listening to the Ministry of Startups Founders Ramble with me, Vinny, and I've been talking over a beer and a mulled wine to Val, who is the sole founder of Pro2Go Food, fine and healthy. And I am a huge advocate of the affordable, sexy food that is Pro2Go. You can find out more at pro2gofood.com. And I've also been talking to Oz from Organize, who's a founding team member of what is a very small organization that is bringing, hopefully, some justice to the British workplace. And what's the website for Organize?
Organize.org.uk, spelt the English way.
Organize, spelt the English way. We don't do Z's. .org.uk. Thank you so much for joining me and enjoying yourselves, hopefully. Was it all right? Was it bearable?
Yeah,
definitely.
Okay. Cheers. Did you learn anything?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Has it changed your life? We'll leave it there. I think that's fine.
Founders Ramble. Stories from entrepreneurs, how they started, why they started, where they're going next. Brought to you by the Ministry of Startups.